Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, Dr. Ross Green here. Welcome to the March edition of the EPS podcast. A little bit delayed. I don't remember why we didn't do it 2 weeks ago, but for whatever reason, there was a conflict. But here we are doing it in March still with our Director of Online Programming joining us, Kim Hopkins-Betts. Kim, how are you?
Morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
I am good. And Kim, we are going to get to a lot of the emails that have been accumulating over the past months because the programs we've been doing have been taking up the entire program and we haven't been really getting to the email. So we will. But headliner for this program is what's the problem with Plan C? So I'm going to jump in here, and then we'll start answering questions that come from emails. And by the way, we also are happy to take callers today. The number there is 347-994-2981 and press 1. So feel free to call in. This would be a good day to do it because what's the problem with Plan C isn't going to take that long. Now, for those of, for the unfamiliar, Plan C is one of your three options for handling unsolved problems. For the familiar, you already know that you have three options to respond to an unsolved problem in this model, Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C. Plan A is where you're solving a problem unilaterally. It's where the adult is deciding what the solution is and imposing it on the kid. And those of you who are familiar with the CPS model know that you are almost never using Plan A when you're implementing this model. And that's because any problem that can be solved with Plan A can be much more productively solved with Plan B. Plan B is where you're solving the problem collaboratively, meaning with the full involvement of the kid who's having difficulty meeting the expectation that is the problem you're trying to solve. We are not talking about Plan A today because we almost never talk about Plan A because, as I just said, you're almost never using Plan A when you're implementing this model. But we're not talking about Plan B today anyway either, and at least until we get to the questions that have been sent into us by email. Talking about Plan C today, what I would call the much-neglected Plan C. Plan C is where you are putting a particular expectation on hold, at least for now. Many people hear that and they think giving in. There's no such thing as giving in the entire CPS model. Many people hear Plan C and they think giving up. There's no such thing as giving up in the CPS model. So it's interesting. Plan C often gets a bad rap because of what people think Plan C is, but Plan C is not what many people think it is. It's putting an unsolved problem on hold, at least for now. Why would you do that? For one of two reasons. Number one, it might not be a high priority unsolved problem right now. As those of you who are familiar with the CPS model know, when you're making a list of unsolved problems, as you are doing on the assessment of skills and unsolved problems, I'll mention a brief word about that after I talk about Plan C. Yes, we're changing the LSIP, now the ASIP. I'm not talking about that yet. Give me 10 minutes. Once you make your list of unsolved problems, there's an excellent chance there are quite a few of them, and you're not going to be able to solve them all at once. What you're doing is you're identifying the three unsolved problems you are going to solve with Plan B, and the rest are being put on hold, at least for now. because you have bigger fish to fry. So that's one reason you might use Plan C for an unsolved problem. You have bigger fish to fry. You have higher priority unsolved problems, and you're trying to solve those first. There's another reason you might use Plan C, and that is that you believe that a particular expectation is actually out of reach for a kid at this point in their development. Out of reach meaning you don't think they can even meet that expectation at this point in their development. That's the other reason you would handle a particular unsolved problem with Plan C. And I think of that as the controversial one. Now we're about to get into it. Now, at a basic level, us caregivers don't tend to be accustomed to removing expectations, even temporarily. It doesn't tend to be our jam. We are much more inclined to load kids up with expectations. That tends to be what makes us feel good as caregivers. We're loading the kid up envelope. We're always trying to make the kid stretch. All good. Unless a kid can't meet a lot of the expectations you're trying to get them to stretch to meet. So I've got an imperfect algorithm for you, because people often ask the question, how do I know if the kid can meet an expectation? I mean, people, generally speaking, prioritizing, if a kid has a lot of unsolved problems, many people get the idea, you're not going to be able to solve them all at once. You're going to be solving problems incrementally. Some have to be put on hold for now. That's not the one that blows a lot of people away. The one that blows people away is you're also removing expectations that are out of reach for the kid right now. How do you know an expectation is out of reach for a kid right now? The answer, judgment call. Judgment call. But here's a very imperfect algorithm to help you out. If the kid can meet the expectation sometimes, it's probably in range. If the kid is never meeting the expectation, it's probably out of range. It's imperfect, I know, but it's not terrible. It's actually okay as an imperfect algorithm. Now, problem with removing expectations that we believe are out of reach for a kid right now, aside from the fact that us caregivers aren't accustomed to removing, we are accustomed to loading up. This is particularly true in schools, but because these days we don't want to deprive anybody of educational opportunities, which is, of course, crucial, that we've got a history of depriving kids of educational opportunities, want to do that. But in many circles, it's been decided that not depriving kids of educational opportunities means making them stay at grade level and giving them any kind of work they can possibly do at grade level, which is interesting. In a lot of education settings these days, we are very reliant and have a great deal of faith in supports, strategies, finding the right entry points, making accommodations, making adaptations. Kids can do work at grade level no matter what that work is. A major thing in a lot of schools these days. And it's not Plan C. That's the key. It's not Plan C. You're still putting the expectation on the kid. And if the kid still can't meet it, even with all our adaptations, all our accommodations, all our finding the right entry points, all our strategies, all our supports, we're still going to cause concerning behavior by placing expectations on kids it cannot reliably meet. And if we do that, Then we have a kid who is accessing the school discipline program. They are blowing out of the classroom. They are sometimes wandering the hallways. They are sometimes running out of the building. And they are sometimes not showing up. This is a major focal point of the United States federal government these days. Apparently, we've discovered that a lot of kids aren't showing up for school these days. That's a complex issue. But let me tell you what I would not show up for if I was a kid expected to show up at school. I would not show up to have expectations placed on me, no matter how modified, no matter how accommodated, no matter how adapted, no matter what the entry point, no matter what the strategy, no matter what the support, I would not show up for expectations I already know I can't meet. And let there be no doubt, if a kid is wandering the hallway, getting suspended for 3 days, running outside of the building, they are not accessing their educational opportunities. So it's a very fascinating thing these days. Plan C is where you are removing an expectation completely, at least for now. And in some education settings, I've had a very strong reaction to Plan C. You can't just remove the expectation, I'm told. You have to accommodate, adapt, find the right entry point, strategize, support, so the kid can do something at grade level. I got to tell you, I totally get the idea of not wanting to deprive kids of educational opportunities. I do not get placing expectations on kids that we already know they cannot reliably meet. The definition of good teaching, good parenting in the CPS model is meeting kids where they're at, making sure every kid gets what they need, being responsive to the hand you've been dealt. Those are also integral to things like differentiated instruction, personalized learning. I have a lot more faith that we'll get the kid up to grade level and deprive them of no educational opportunities if we are meeting them where they're at. I have much more faith in that as ultimately getting the kid as far as they can go than I do making sure that a kid is at grade level, because that's become the definition of not depriving kids of their educational opportunities and placing work on them, placing expectations on them that we already know they can't meet. Once again, a lot of those kids are blowing out of their classrooms, not accessing educational opportunities, out of school for numerous days, not showing up at all. Once again, you're not accessing your educational opportunities when that stuff is happening. Good teaching means meeting kids where they're at. Good teaching does not mean making sure that students can absolutely do something at grade level, no matter what it is, and even if they can't do it. Controversial, I know. We're not looking to sell anybody short. We're not looking to deprive anybody of their educational opportunities. We're looking to meet kids where they're at. What's the problem with Plan C? Well, there is no problem with Plan C. If you're doing Plan C, you're managing your expectations. You're meeting kids where they're at. You're making sure that you are placing expectations upon kids that they can actually meet. You're helping them stretch. You're making sure they're accessing their educational opportunities. All good. I told you that was going to take about 15 minutes. Now, if you have any questions or comments about that and you are listening live, and because this is on a different time and day than usual, I appreciate the fact that there are probably no people listening live, but many people listen to the recording of the program. So if you have questions or comments and you're listening to the recording, go to the contact form on the Lives in the Balance website and let us know what you think. If you are listening live and you have questions or comments, feel free to join in. What we're going to do now is answer some questions. And we've got a whole half hour to do it, so we should make very good progress. Kim, you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. Question number one came to us in December, just to show you how far behind we are. Do you have any resources for parents of explosive twins? I'm finding it impossible to implement a lot of the strategies with two exploding at the same time. Actually, three now, because baby brother is starting to show a lot of similar behaviors. I don't have any other adult help, so dividing them up isn't an option. I am at my absolute limit. I wish we could have gotten to this one sooner, because people are at their absolute limit. They don't want to wait 3 months to get an answer. But here we go. Kim, do you want to jump in on that one? Because people have been listening to me for 15 minutes.
I think people love listening to you, but I'll say a few things and then we can tag team. That is a lot, having three young ones who are all showing really unlucky frustration responses and stress signals. I think a lot of it loops back to what we were just talking about, you know, that there's no magic in the heat of the moment, right? There's no magic thing to do to, once kids are sort of popping off and exploding, what do you do right then? You just got to get them back to baseline and got to make sure everybody's safe, right? Proactive being the key, and figuring out using that assessment, formerly known as the assessment of lagging skills and unsolved problems, soon to be known of the assessment of skills and unsolved problems, to really figure out those times when you can predict that your kids are not going to handle something well and therefore show their frustration responses. Once we can predict that, we can use a combination of proactive plan C, going back again to the beginning of the show, you know, what expectations can we table? What expectations can we manage so that we're not managing so much behavior? I think that's really critical. And then, you know, figuring out which ones are we going to prioritize, but not too many at once, you know, to work on with proactive plan B in the CPS model. But I think this is a well-timed one because I think you're going to need plan C. And what does that look like? And I often find, just as educators don't feel like they have permission to use plan C, parents don't either, because of what well-meaning and well-intentioned family might say, or neighbors or friends, right? And if you know your child can't reliably meet certain expectations, you know, how are you going to table that so that you're not pulling out your hair and finding yourself in the heat of the moment as much? Well, you might add, Dr.
Love
Green.
It. Well, the thing I was going to say bluntly is, if you've got 2.5 kids exploding at the same time, the last thing you want to do is find yourself in the heat of the moment with that, which is what you just said. But step number one would be to do the now named assessment of skills and unsolved problems. And that cues me to remind me to tell you all about this. You want to do the ASAP on all three kids. So you have your list of unsolved problems. And for each kid, you're deciding, all of this is proactive, which ones you're going to start solving. Now, typically we limit people to three per kid, but that gives you 9. I think that might be too many for you. So make it manageable for you. I think you want to have at least 1 or 2 unsolved problems that you want to work on proactively, so you're not in the heat of the moment, with each kid. You haven't given us any information about what they're exploding about. So the other thing I want to remind you about is that the explosion is late. You're mostly referring to behaviors. The behavior is late. The behavior is just the frustration response, the problem that's causing it. That's the expectation that a kid is having difficulty meeting. That's early. And the assessment of skills and unsolved problems is going to help you identify those unsolved problems for each kid. Decide which ones you're going to start solving. That's going to be plan B. And which ones Kim, as you said, relevant to our topic of the day, you are going to put on hold, at least for now, so that you're not dealing with too much. And now you got to start solving problems proactively so that you are not in the heat of the moment with 2.5 kids who are losing it. And the last thing I'll say is that's why you're at your limits. You're in the heat of the moment a lot, and that is not a fun place to be. And here's the deal. If we don't help you start solving problems collaboratively and proactively, you're going to be in the heat of the moment forever. And dividing them up isn't going to solve any of the problems that are causing the concerning behaviors that you're dividing them up about. So we've got to get you started. There's lots of video in the guided tour on the Lives in the Balance website to get you fully oriented to this model and get you squared away on how to use the ASIP, how to use Plan B, and then stop dividing and start solving collaboratively and proactively. Of course, number one, we apologize for how long you've had to wait for an answer. And number two, we wish you the best. Now, speaking of the ALSIP, what used to be the Assessment of Lagging Skills and Unsolved Problems, or ALSIP 2020, is now the ASIP 2024. ASUP. Why did we take out the word lagging? That was mostly us trying to be responsive to the neurodivergent community, which let us know that they don't like being told that they're lagging anything, and that lagging tends to have a neurotypical reference point. So we agree, lagging's gone. It's now the ASUP, A-S-U-P, 2024. People have asked how they should pronounce it. I would probably prefer ASUP over ASUP. I'm sure the rest of you would as well. So I'm going to call it the ASIP. You can call it whatever you want. The lagging skill section is now the skills section. It's changed a little bit, especially the directions and some of the skills. The unsolved problem section is exactly the same. So if you knew how to use the ALSIP 2020, you're going to know how to use the ASIP 2024. And I am hoping that by tomorrow, March 20th, we will have the new ASIP up on the website, the new ASIP guide up on the website, the Lives in the Balance website, that is. And we will have instructions for how to use the new ASIP up on the website. I think we can get this done by tomorrow, March 20th. Anyways, that is the plan. So, new ASIP. A few other announcements before I forget. The Lives in the Balance Annual Summit with the theme of Voices of the Neurodivergent Community is coming up fast on April 12th. It is virtual, again, it is free. And as last I've been told, we have close to 2,500 people registered, which is the goal. It's the annual summit on collaborative and proactive solutions. We have some dynamite keynote speakers, all members of the neurodivergent community, all with fascinating perspectives on neurodivergence and autism and pathological demand avoidance. That's in the morning and during lunch. And in the afternoon, we have many breakout groups on applying the CPS model in schools and families and clinical settings. It's free. And if you register for the summit, then even if you can't attend live, you can get the recording of the summit sent to you. So registration is on the Lives in the Balance website. In the Our Solution section of the website, if you go down to workshops and trainings, you'll find the registration for the summit. Actually, you don't even have to put that amount of work in. All you have to do is go to the homepage of the Lives in the Balance website, and there is a banner streaming across the top. Click on that, and you will be able to register for the summit. Once again, it's free. Hope to see you there. It's free. It's virtual. It's recorded. All good. Kim, are we ready for another question?
Yes, I'm ready.
Here we go. I'm struggling with my 13-year-old son, an eighth grader, and working with his school to help him better meet their expectations. He always met expectations up until sixth grade. COVID, a new teacher, and our divorce probably affected him. They just sent me a consequence menu as his new behavior plan with all the negative consequences for any defiance, talking back, etc. They wanted me to fill out all of the negative consequences I will give him at home. I know this approach will not work with my son and wanted some support figuring out how to approach the school with helping him meet expectations. I do have your handouts from the website, and I have read Raising Human Beings, and I'm reading The Explosive Child now. My son has an IEP for anxiety, and I have the IEP resources from your website. I was wondering if you have resources for a behavior plan and really wanting advice for approaching the school in a constructive way that doesn't cause them to shut me out. Here we go. Boy, this I would call this a loaded email. And I apologize to you as well for how long it took for us to get to you. But the good news is, even though we're late with you, we might be on time for somebody else. So I'm glad we are getting to it. Here's the interesting thing. Consequence menu. Consequences, which both include rewards and punishments. A lot of people use the word consequence to refer to punishment, but a consequence, by definition, is an event that occurs after the fact, a reward or a punishment. And by the way, I should point out that an event that occurs after the fact is late, by definition. A consequence is late. It occurs after the fact. We don't want to be late. We want to be early. But that's actually a minor point here. Your son, you feel that your son was doing great up until sixth grade. He's in eighth grade now. Got COVID, got a new teacher, gone through a divorce. They may have affected him. Those are interesting theories. You know your son best, of course, maybe, and what may have affected him and caused him to go from what he was in the sixth grade to now having difficulty meeting lots of expectations in the eighth grade. And it sounds like his behaviors now include defiance and talking back. I'm going to think that those weren't there when he was in the sixth grade while he was meeting expectations. Kids are only defiant and talk back in response to expectations they're having difficulty meeting. So key point number one here, besides the fact that consequences are late by definition, is the fact that I can't think of any reward or punishment that's going to help your son recover from COVID, deal with a new teacher, or deal with your divorce. Consequences don't do that. Here's the next big point. They want you to do consequences at home. Fascinating. You mean you're supposed to consequence your kid at home for expectations the kid is having difficulty meeting at school? That makes no sense. In other words, he's miserable at school. Let's make him miserable at home too. But that's not the main reason it doesn't make sense. The main reason it doesn't make sense is because, number one, consequences aren't going to solve any of the problems he's having at school, no matter where they're administered. Parents are actually not well positioned to solve problems that are going on at school. Unsolved problems at school are occurring on the school's watch. Those are there for the school to solve. Parents, you're not expecting the school to help you out with the fact that your kid's having difficulty brushing teeth before going to bed at night. I don't know why the school would expect you to help out with difficulty completing the double-digit division problems on the worksheet in math. So this is already upside down because it makes no sense that the school folks think that anything you do at home is going to help a kid meet expectations that a kid is having difficulty meeting at school. Now, there's a few exceptions. There are some unsolved problems on which there is overlap between home and school. Coming to school, overlap. Coming to school on time, overlap. Homework, overlap. Coming to school well-clothed, well-fed, well-slept, overlap. Separating from one's parents to come into the building, overlap. There's a few more. On those, it's outstanding if the school folks and the home folks can collaborate together. But number one, consequences are not problem-solving strategies. They are behavior modification strategies. And number two, I can't think of a consequence ever invented that is going to solve a problem at school. So I'm glad you know that that will not work with your son. And I'm glad you're using the language of the CPS model. You're talking about expectations your son is having difficulty meeting, not the behaviors that are being caused by those unsolved problems. I love that you are finding resources that you can use on the Lives in the Balance website. I love that your son has an IEP. An IEP for anxiety may not address everything that's making it hard for your son to meet expectations now. So one thing I would do is revisit the IEP. After I completed the assessment of skills and unsolved problems, because I want to make absolutely sure that everything that's going on with your son is well identified and well documented, especially when it comes to skills that may be making it hard, problems and frustrations adaptively, but especially when it comes to what I presume is going to be a fairly long list of unsolved problems at this point. We're going to have to prioritize those unsolved problems. We're not going to be able to work on them all at once. Going back to what I was talking about earlier in the program, we want to make sure that those expectations are actually in reach for your son, so that he's not being defiant and talking back over expectations that shouldn't even be being placed on him in the first place. We have been trying to get a CPS-flavored behavior plan up on the Lives in the Balance website forever. I keep having people tell me they'll send me a CPS-flavored behavior plan. It hasn't happened yet. I think I'm going to have to write it myself. But once again, we'll try to get a CPS-flavored behavior plan up on the Lives in the Balance website. We already have a CPS-flavored IEP. We already have a CPS-flavored functional behavior assessment. I just want to make sure that the IEP is a reflection of all that is known about your son and not just the fact that he has anxiety. And I think that the assessment of skills and unsolved problems is going to give us that information, and that that might require a change in both the IEP and the behavior plan. Ken, I just went on for a very long time. Any thoughts to add on that?
I appreciate you going on for a long time because although it didn't necessarily pertain to my kid, I was in the very same position when my kid's school announced that they were going to be doing a new demerit system. And so I had a little visceral reaction to this email at first. So I appreciate you going on. But the one thing I would mention when you're trying to help shift the school's perspective is, you know, first of all, acknowledging, of course, that they're dealing with a lot, no doubt about it. And they're trying their best to help him. That is a given, right? And saying, you know, this consequence menu, just going to tell him that the defiance and other behaviors he's doing we don't like, he actually already knows that. And so the big worry being if we're telling something he already knows, you know, we could be wasting our time on the low end, but really running the risk of making things worse that maybe he'll want to avoid school altogether. And that would be not something any of us wants because then he won't be accessing education and all that, right? And so just kind of starting to kind of help them think about how it's maybe the way you've always done things, and yet he already knows that what he's doing is not okay. So we need to do something else. And then lots of great wisdom from Dr. Green on the something else. So
Excellent. I think we have time for one more. It's a long one, but it's worth reading. Here we go. First, a compliment for us. Wow, I feel so blessed to have found your work, podcast, and videos. Thank you so much for all of these, and it's free. God bless you for this. Before finding out a lot about your approach, I sort of implemented a similar approach when talking to my 7-year-old boy. Not actively, I'm ashamed to say, but just recently tried to implement it. He's having difficulty keeping his hands to himself. What I mean is that he's not hurting anyone, but he's all over his friends, family, and sometimes other people. For instance, at pickup from school, he picks up his friends and or sister, 5 years old, and spins them around or starts chasing them. When cousins come over to our place to visit, he lifts up their T-shirts and blows their tummies. He is gentle, but the honest truth is that not many people like it. I've heard a few of his friends already saying, please don't, or stop. And surely my family is polite and says nicely, okay, but just one time. Some other people have even said to him, please don't touch me, I do not like it. He and I have spoken. I literally said, hey, I have noticed that you are not keeping your hands to yourself, and we have spoken about it during the summer. You are a second grader now, and expectations are that you keep your hands to yourself. I want to help you. So what do you think? So why do you think you cannot do it? His answer was, I get too excited and I can't control myself. So I replied, do you think you can stop and think about your actions next time you're waiting for mommy to pick you up? He said, I can try, but I'm not sure. Then I said, what about we choose a signal that can help you remember so you stop using your hands to play with your friends? He chose a hand sign, 2 fingers up. The thing is, it didn't work. Because when I call his name, he doesn't look at me. Most of the time, I have to come near him and grab him. Could you please help us? I don't know how we can solve this problem. Again, he says that his problem is that he gets too excited, and I am stuck. All right. Kim, you want to take that one?
I will certainly start. I really appreciate the dialogue that was provided of the back and forth in there. It really helps to give some good information and some detail. So I think I would start by saying that nice effort on, you know, trying to have the model in mind to solve the problem, sure. And a couple of things to think about to maybe get farther on your next attempt. The wording of the unsolved problem, you know, it sounds like difficulty keeping hands to self, which is a fine verb phrase to use, but it happens with lots of different kids under lots of different circumstances or in lots of different places. And so maybe narrowing it to just one particular kid in one particular circumstance, you know, so even if it's many different friends at pickup time, kind of going with one as an example so that you can get even more information from him to really understand what happens in his brain. You know, so difficulty keeping hands to self with Joey during pickup yesterday. Now, even though it happened with 5 kids and it happens every day, if we're narrowing it down to just thinking about that, could help you even get more information beyond I'm too excited and I can't control myself. I think that's great beginning information, and we could maybe even get deeper by using some of the drilling strategies that we have. We do have a drilling cheat sheet on the website to kind of have in front of you as you're practicing drilling strategies, but you know, maybe asking questions about favorite drilling strategy, which is, you know, number four, what are you thinking in the midst of the unsolved problem? So, you know, yesterday when you were at pickup and Joey was there, right, what was your brain thinking, or what did you start thinking when you saw him or something like that? And if he can't answer you, you know, you're his partner and taking some guesses about maybe what his brain's doing in that moment. Like, oh, you know, I just like Joey so much, and or whatever it might be that you might want to guess about that. Yeah, so I think mainly kind of just narrowing down, splitting and specifying the unsolved problem, even though it happens lots and lots and lots and lots of times. I would remember that Plan C is available to you as you work on this. I'm always quoting this school district in Canada who sent me a picture of their bulletin board that says, "We plan C until we can plan B." So, you know, keeping in mind you're going to work on, you know, one nice split specific example of this, and maybe thinking about how do you use Plan C to kind of keep things calm in the meantime until you have a solution that you're trying to kind of, you know, keep everybody's comfort level and stop things from getting worse kind of thing. That's what I would begin with. What else would you add, Dr. Green?
Things I would add are, well, first of all, the major thrust is go further with your drilling, which you said. You know, I don't like guessing, but there's some chance you're going to hear things like, I want to be friends with these kids. I want them to notice me. I want them to pay attention to me. And I would split the unsolved problem into the different places where it's occurring. I get it that the behavior is a commonality. That doesn't mean that your son is having difficulty meeting the expectation of in different circumstances for the exact same reason. So I would split it and keep it to one circumstance that you're talking about initially. Then find out if what you now know about that circumstance applies to the other ones. But I would be more specific in terms of the specific location. And then the only other piece I would say is try to come up with a solution that isn't occurring in the thick of it. That's late. I think you want a solution that's going to solve the problem so it doesn't come up in the first place. And I get it. You wanted to give your son a signal to remind him. I'm not sure that he said he was forgetting. And if he's not forgetting, then a reminder actually isn't going to solve the problem. But that's why it's critical that you go further in the empathy step so we find out everything that could be getting in his way. And let's say, I have no idea, obviously, that he says, "I want to be friends with Jimmy." You want to be friends with Jimmy. You want him to notice you, perhaps. And the way that you're thinking of to be friends with Jimmy and to notice you is by picking up his shirt and laying hands on him. My concern, this is the define about concern step, is that I don't think it's working very well. I think that my observation is that kids don't like it, and that it would be good if we could find another way for you to let kids notice you and show them that you like them in a way that they don't mind very much. Now you're thinking of solutions that could actually be proactive, not solutions that you're implementing just as he is at the precipice of touching yet another kid. I hope that was helpful. It's the last question we're going to be able to answer today because we only have a little bit of time left in the program. Once again, everybody, don't forget, Lives in the Balance Summit coming up on April 12th. It's free. It's virtual. Just jump on the homepage of the Lives in the Balance website. That'll take you to registration. Kim, thanks as always for your thoughts and for doing the program with me. We'll see you all next month. Take care, everybody.
Thank you. Take care.